Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm Zachariah Hughes. This week we'll be talking with two Anchorage mayors about two recessions. With us are Tom Fink, who took over the reins of Anchorage in 1987, not long after the collapse in the price of oil, and by Ethan Berkowitz, who's been in office for just about a month now. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you.
In just a minute, we'll dive in. But before that, we're trying something a little bit new, a quick roundup of this week's biggest stories from across the state. Environmental activists in Oregon temporarily blocked a Royal Dutch Shell icebreaker from heading north as the oil company began exploratory drilling in the Chukchi Sea. The Fenica left harbor soon after the Coast Guard and local authorities disbanded the protests. Homeowners on the Matanuska River outside Sutton are seeing the riverbank erode before their very eyes. The river's claimed at least one home and a handful of outbuildings. Several more homes are at risk from the erosion, as well as the Glen Highway. And crews from the Department of Transportation are on hand about 6 miles north of Sutton to protect the road. Early Wednesday morning, a Cathay Pacific Airways flight en route from Hong Kong to Los Angeles made an emergency landing at a military airport on Shemya, the very tip of the Aleutian chain. The airline said Thursday a piece of equipment malfunctioned, causing smoke in the plane, in the cabin, rather. All 294 people on board were unharmed, and the plane continued on to Anchorage without incident. This week, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down a 2003 exemption that would have made it possible to build roads through the Tongass National Forest. The court's decision to uphold the so-called roadless rule in the Tongass is being celebrated by conservationists, but called unfair by industry groups. The state has the option to appeal to the Supreme Court. And a last news item that's a good segue into today's main discussion, Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz released his administration's transition report, a blueprint for addressing a wide array of issues across the city over the next 3 years. This isn't a new step for an incoming administration, but there are some big departures from what the former Mayor Dan Sullivan administration's report looked like in 2009. And earlier this summer, five past mayors of Anchorage convened for a discussion on the city's past, present, and future. It was a centennial event hosted by the Cook Inlet Historical Society. They shared the highs and lows from their time at the city's helm, and we've pulled a few moments from that.
In 1981, when I became mayor, it was exciting times, far different in many ways from when Jack was mayor. We had about 125,000 people when I came into office, and when I left 6 years later, it was 250,000 people. Incredible growth. What an excitement, but also what a challenge. We had the money, we had projects. So what's the problem? Well, the problem is always is how can you do it right? And doing it right means public safety, public health, quality of life, and what kind of city were we becoming?
As we know, in 2008, the world went into the worst recession in 70 years. Anchorage was in a very unusual and unfortunate situation where expenses were rising dramatically, partly because of recently passed labor contracts. At the same time, revenues were clearly declining. Not only did we tighten the belt and make sure that things were being spent effectively and efficiently, we reorganized, we put services online, and the result is that not only do we have adequate reserves now, we raised the bar on what reserves are. We can say today with great pride that we are one of the strongest cities financially in America.
Our economy, you know, we fought through it and all that and barely got by, but really got us by was the Exxon Valdez spill. That brought the economy back. Everything to straighten out Valdez and the spill was all located in Anchorage, so the headquarters of Mozavico, I guess, at that time. And that's really what brought the economy back. I can say this now, I couldn't say it publicly before, but in the subsequent year or so, when we wanted the economy to improve a little, we said, you know, a spill in Cook Inlet would be pretty nice.
So, Mr. Fink, later on we'll get to a little bit more about that comment on the spill. But before we do, I want to start with you, Mr. Berkowitz. You know, to start out, are we in a recession in Anchorage? And how is the state's fiscal situation shaping the economic policy goals you're going after?
We are definitely not in a recession. I would characterize it perhaps as a slowdown, a speed bump. But the Anchorage economy is showing continued growth and has forecast for growth moving ahead. So the impact that we're going to have to deal with is as the state draws down its resources, we're going to have to contend with that. But the municipality of Anchorage is in a strong fiscal situation right now.
And earlier this week, the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation released a three-year outlook report. And some things looked good, tonnage up at the Port of Anchorage, some other things relatively flat. I'm wondering, can you summarize that report as it was presented to you and what some of the other indicators that you're looking at are?
Well, you look at things like we're the air crossroads of the world in a logistics hub. 10% of the jobs locally are based out of the airport. Another 10% are based on the tourism industry. Those sectors are growing. That's important. The port is growing. You're seeing a new kind of Anchorage develop as we have a different demographic than we've had in the past. We now have some of the most ethnically diverse neighborhoods in the entire country. That's changing what our economy is going to look like. And in some ways, we are insulated from the impacts that resource development or resource economy has because we have the presence of the native corporations. And the native corporations are net importers of capital into the local economy, and they help stabilize and diversify what the profile of the Anchorage business community looks like.
Well, I want to go back to that, and in particular, some of the ways that the economy is structurally different now than it was when Mr. Fink was at the helm. But Mr. Fink, to start out, can you just tell me a little bit about what it was like when you took over? I mean, Anchorage doubled in size in the early 80s, and I'm curious, after the collapse in the price of oil and the housing market here in Anchorage, what looked different during your time in office?
Well, we were in a deep recession. People were losing jobs. Property values went down 40%. My term, assessed value of city property went down 40%. I was just checking my value of my house went up 15%, for example, in the last 2 years. So where were we going to get the money? I mean, we got people, friends, who were losing their jobs, losing their homes. I lost some property. In fact, my wages were guaranteed when I was mayor for about 3 or 4 months until we got that settled. I felt a heavy responsibility to carry the city through until things turned around. So we had to figure out how not to burden the people anymore, how not to increase taxes, which means you had to not spend more money as governments always do. And so in our 6 years, the budget was flat, which it's always going up in government. And that creates a lot of problems with people who are employed sort of feel like, what's going on? What's the problem? Why are you not giving me raises? It was an enjoyable time. In my period as mayor was a very frosty time. We had difficulty with labor unions and various other things. And I had a recall against me that was dropped. They may have had the signatures, I don't know. But anyway, new programs, stopping what they call government inflation. You're supposed to spend more money every year just to stay even. It's very difficult. As a result, you know, I had a huge number of vetoes, more than all the other mayors combined. And I enjoyed it, even though it was not easy. It was a tough period because we don't have money, and we couldn't look to the state for any help. They didn't have any money then, like they do now. I mean, the state currently has huge budget, reserve funds, if they decide to use them. But it was connected to, clearly, to the price of oil dropping from $30, if you can imagine $30 oil, down to $8 oil, which is what, down to about a third of the value of what it was. Now it's down to about a half of what it was.
I just want to ask, after one thing that you'd mentioned, of the state not having any money, really, in 1986, this kind of being an unprecedented thing for Alaska, that huge of a dip. And Mayor Berkowitz, I want to ask you, how linked is Anchorage's economy with the state's at this point? Are we insulated To a large degree because of the tax base that make up a lot of city revenues?
The linkages between the state's economy, the state government, and the municipal economy, there's clear ties. But right now, the municipality is on a very strong fiscal footing, and the type of economy that we have in Anchorage is more diversified than it has been in the past. We're clearly a headquarter city. The companies that do business on the North Slope, the fishing industry, the tourism, they're headquartered here. But the impact of the state budget cuts is distinct than it was during the 80s, where we were much more dependent. And in some ways, that's consistent with the original notion of how governments were supposed to be constructed. And initially, Alaska had a very strong government out of Juneau, a strong central government, because the local governments didn't have the wherewithal to take care of their own responsibilities. Anchorage now has 300,000 people, and we have a greater capacity to take care of ourselves than we have in the past.
And both of you served in the legislature before you were executives at the city level, a little bit uncommon for mayors of Anchorage who usually come up through the city to take over. And I'm curious what tools a mayor has at their disposal that legislators don't, and what at the borough level or at the municipal level a mayor can do that's a little bit different to handle economic fluctuations. Either one of you.
Well, as chief executive, there's just a lot of things you can do as mayor that you can't do as a legislator. As a legislator, you got to get legislation passed through both houses, and then the governor gets to make a lot of final decisions. Well, the mayor, there are a lot of things he can do on his own. There are a lot of things that he can only do with the consent of the assembly. But it's a substantially different, I think it's really a more satisfying job. You can know what you got to do and do it. In the legislature, you got to get a whole bunch of other people to agree with you, and also the governor.
Being a legislator is about knowing how to count, making sure that you have enough votes to move something through a committee or pass the House or pass the Senate. And so the counting is at a premium. But being the chief executive, you've got to have, at least my experience in the entire month that I've been doing the job, is having a vision of where you want to take the city and having the capacity to rally the people, not just who are working for the city, but the entire population that lives here, is much different. It's less insular than being a legislator.
The state, though, can dip into fund reserves, can, play around with different revenue sources. Mayor Berkowitz, when you were running for office, I remember asking you what ideas you had for new revenue sources, and you said before getting there, there was some low-hanging fruit that you wanted to take care of, specifically the Ariba procurement policy and some energy efficiency programs around town. I'm curious if I know it's only been 31 days, but if you've gone after any of those, and if that's going to be enough.
Look, there's a range of things you have to do in order to make sure that the business of government is being well run. And I come at this with private sector experience, where every day when you have a budget, you have a responsibility to making sure you're getting value for the dollars that are being spent. And yes, we're looking at extracting more value for the dollars that the city is spending, making sure that energy efficiencies are being taken care of, that procurement is being done as efficiently as possible, that we're doing the work that most needs to be done, we're prioritizing. So those are just standard business practices that we're deploying in the municipality today.
And Mayor Dan Sullivan kind of prided himself on having reduced the budget by cutting from a lot of places within city administration. Do you feel like you've inherited a pretty lean and efficiently running apparatus?
One of the challenges we have moving forward is to make sure that the morale of the city is rebuilt, because I have a high degree of trust of the people that work for local government, because public service is an honorable calling, and if you trust the people who are working for you, if you hire good people, and if you let them run, they're going to come up with some terrific ideas of being able to serve the public better than perhaps they have in the past, because they're less concerned about being reprimanded or chastised for showing initiative. And I also think that they're going to come up with smarter, more efficient ways of using the resources that they currently have.
Mayor Fink, for you, when you took over, how did you handle some of the budgetary constraints that your administration was under? I mean, you'd mentioned before keeping the budget flat, but did you have to cut programs? Did you have to scale back the municipality that you'd inherited?
Yes, we did. The
Yeah, particularly in the area of when I first came in, we had new union contracts that were negotiated before I became mayor, and they all required raises. And we tried not to raise. We asked the unions if they would. We said we're not going to spend any more money in your department when we spent last year. And if we have to pay some people more money, it means there could be fewer of you. Some of the unions made concessions. Some didn't. We didn't raise the budget of that department. So, but you know, beyond that, you try to see where you can save money, just as Mayor Berkowitz is doing, with the programs that they're overspending. You're not getting the service for the buck. So you try to economize, but you do cut some programs, because there is increased costs of various things year to year to year. And if you keep your budget flat, you're going to have to cut something. And so we pretty well cut for 6 years.
What did you cut?
Oh, man, you're asked me 25 years ago. I don't remember specific things that we cut, other than that we did keep labor flat.
I want to ask you something. I'm tipping my hand age-wise when I say this, but I was not here in 1986 or 1987. I was not alive. One of the things I hear about that period is that people were leaving town and throwing their car keys out the window. I thought that that was hyperbole, but I've since been told that, no, that literally was happening. What's the truth there, and how did your administration deal with this property bubble that almost overnight had kind of imploded?
Yeah, well, our population, by the way, did go down 12,000 during that period of time. And when people, their homes were foreclosed on, they lost their job, we had a lot of people leave. How do we handle it? Well, you got a program you want to have, and you could add some new programs, saving money somewhere else. But you make sure that it's within your budget. You try to keep morale up. He mentioned morale because it's difficult. And the assembly, from each of their districts, the people in their districts want this and want that, want this, and you got to say no to most of them. But the public, after about a year, really came around that things were tough and we had to have those cuts. And we got through it with reasonable police, fire, everything. But specific things, my memory's not that good.
I would think that if you have an honest discussion with the public, if you treat the public like mature adults and explain the nature of the situation, we've got fewer dollars coming in, we're not going to be able to do everything that we have perhaps in the past, some of the things that we've done in the past might not be relevant today. The public, they get it. And it's just having respect for the electorate will help an elected official immensely. It's when you get a lot of pandering and making promises that can't be kept, that you generate cynicism and skepticism, and then it becomes harder to govern and harder to make the tough decisions that inevitably have to get made.
Do you feel like we're there yet, that it's time to start having conversations about which programs and services need to be reduced or cut?
Well, you're seeing this at the state level already. Governor Walker and his team, they've been very candid about the difficulties that the state is in. I mean, I tend to subscribe to the view that the state doesn't have a resource problem, it has a cash flow problem. And so the conversations we're having at the state level as Alaskans, those are mature conversations and people are responding. And when they translate to the local level, when I perhaps speak to a constituency that's impacted by some of the state cuts and say, if you want those services, someone's going to have to pay for it. The public understands that and they don't resist it. They just don't want to spend too much. But the idea that we're going to have to pay for something sometime in the future because the state's not able to do it, you talk to someone who wants those services, they'll be willing to do it.
When you were campaigning, one of the things that you were really eager to talk about was expanding the public safety system mm-hmm. that we have in place here. And I'm curious if there's enough money coming into Anchorage to run the government that you inherited and enough money to expand some of the services.
Yes, there is. We have the ability to make sure we're running two police academies a year and grow the police force.
And what about capital projects? I mean, is it feasible for Anchorage to be going after the port upgrade and eventual infrastructure improvements without the kind of generous flow of monies from the state or the federal government? Can we foot the bill?
The presupposition for that is the only place you can get money for a project is to go to government. And I just reject that premise completely. There's all kinds of public-private partnerships you can engage in. There's interesting financing mechanisms that are out there. There's linkages between the municipality and the state that we haven't taken full advantage of. So we will be able to move forward on the port project. We'll be able to move forward on a lot of the other projects that the municipality should be doing. We're going to have to prioritize. We can't just take care of every whim and every wish, but that's as it should be. I don't think government should ever expand and be all things to all people. That's a ridiculous place for it to be. Maybe Mayor Fink is surprised to hear me say that, but we've both served in public office when times were tight, and that's a hard lesson learned.
Well, speaking of hard times, Mayor Fink, I want to get back to this before we lose all of our time, but your comment about the Exxon Valdez spill kind of saving the city, that seemed a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I'm curious what you attribute to the rebound for the Anchorage economy in the 90s.
Well, the beginning of the rebound was the Valdez spill. I mean, they spent billions, and they were headquartered here. And people who owned airplanes out at Lake Hood and anywhere, that were always hard-pressed. All of a sudden, PECO or Exxon leased their airplane for a year or something and paid horrendous prices. Same with boats.
Spillionaires. Yeah. Isn't that what they call them? Spillionaires?
Yeah, yeah. So it pumped huge amounts of money into our economy. I really wasn't tongue-in-cheek. It did turn the economy around. You know, we also worked on trying to lessen regulations, building permits and so forth. We actually hired an outside firm to help them get the permits in and out in a hurry and that kind of thing. But things slowly came back, but the big injection was several billion dollars from that spill, which most of the money ended up here.
Do you feel like the economy right now in Anchorage is structurally different than what it was like in the 80s when you took over?
Well, I don't think so. I think it's the same, you know. We got a few more people. But the economy is generally good, and even if the military pulls out, that's a possibility out years, and Congress is, a lot of the congressmen don't want that to happen, and a new president isn't going to want that to happen. We got the gas pipeline possibility, and they're spending a lot of money right now. So we have a lot of things. I think if the city gives everybody an opportunity to expand, to go to new jobs and things of that sort, I mean, municipal government has an obligation to try to make that type of condition available. So in the free enterprise system, you don't know where the economy is going to grow from totally.
We don't have a five-year plan that Mayor Berkowitz has installed.
You got to give the people an opportunity.
I do want to talk about that opportunity, and you mentioned this in really early on in one of your answers. But what are the bright spots on the horizon for Anchorage's economy? Because it doesn't sound like it's all doom and gloom when you spell it out.
There are a lot of reasons for optimism. We have reason for optimism because of our location in the world. Our geography is hugely significant in terms of the logistics, in terms of the airport, the port, even in terms of the railroad. Our geography is significant in terms of being an attractive place for the military to be. Our geography is important because of the opening of the Arctic. As I've been telling people, we have a lot of opportunities because of where we are. We're going to achieve success because of who we are. And the who we are is a diverse population with all kinds of skills. The fact that we're composed of people who've either come here from another place shows that we have enough moxie to be entrepreneurs and get things going. Or if we've been here for a long time, we've got enough persistence and ingenuity to survive. So we'll be able to figure this out. We have the character that's necessary to survive no matter what the rest of the world is doing.
Mr. Fink, do you see bright spots? Are there things that you see on the horizon that you're excited about economically for Anchorage or for Alaska?
Well, I think government has held back a lot of the development, not the state government, the federal government. But if we open up some mining areas, like a pebble where to get going, things of that sort, this gas pipeline, if it comes on board, we'll have a boom economy for a few years. And then the other, you know, the mayor has mentioned our airport is extremely important, and our location generally is extremely important as far as the economy growing.
From one mayor to another, do you have any advice for Mr. Berkowitz?
Do a good job.
If you loan me some bow ties, I'll be good.
Okay.
I guess, you know, I asked this in a little bit of a different way, but Mr. Fink, do you think there's enough money right now coming into Anchorage to fund the city? Is there a need to look to new revenue sources, or are we structurally copacetic where we are?
I don't think we need new revenue sources. I think we've got the sources we have. You can adjust, and I think it's important to try to keep regulations to a minimum so people can go forward. I think that's a critical thing for the mayor always.
Mr. Mayor, any last comments from you on the economy?
I think the economy is poised for bigger things. We're going to have to figure out how to deal with the state's shortfall, but it's going to redefine the relationship between the state and the municipality, and ultimately that's a very liberating place for us to be.
That's all the time we have here on Alaska Edition. Thank you to both of my guests, former Anchorage Mayor Tom Fink and current Mayor Ethan Berkowitz, and thank you at home for joining us. I'm Zachariah Hughes.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.